Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming to what's probably the graveyard shift of the convention, morning after the conventional dinner. This morning's paper is by Shu Su. Shu Su is a graduate at the University of New South Wales, Australian School of Business, majoring in actuarial studies and finance with honours in actuarial studies. He was also holding a teaching role at the School of Actuarial Studies for Year 3 level actuarial courses, life insurance and superannuation models and financial economics. Before joining the School of Actuarial Studies, he was researching at the School of Banking and Finance with Dr. In the financial exchange field. He's currently doing research with Professor Mike Sherris, who obviously needs no introduction, and his main research area is on mortality risk modelling and annuity and the annuity market. My name is Brylan Cummings from KPMG, and I'll be chairing the session today. This session has been marked with the double star, so I hope you've all got your thinking caps on. Thank you. She's going to be speaking for about 40 minutes, but we'll be more than happy to take questions along the way.
Hello, everyone. My name is Shu, and today I'm glad to be here to present you the paper by Michael Sherris and Shu Su. The paper is called The Heterogeneity of Australian Population Mortality and Implications for a Viable Life Annuity Market. So basically, the presentation will be covering the following topics. So we will have a quick introduction about what we are going to do and why we are doing this. And then we will talk a little bit more about the models, especially the two models we will be using for quantifying heterogeneity. The first one is the well-established frailty model, and the other one is the recent established Markov aging model. And we will then talk a little bit about the data and the results for fitting those two models, and also what impact would heterogeneity have on life annuity business? And in the end, a short conclusion. So since we only have a relatively small number of elite audience, so we leave us the advantage to have a more detailed discussion. So please feel free to ask any questions anytime during the presentation. So let's get started with the background. So we all know that the risks in insured portfolios are heterogeneous. So some risks are higher than the others. And if we ignore such heterogeneity, one of the possible consequences would be adverse selection. So for example, for the motor vehicle insurance, if you don't rate your risks separately, you would probably end up with a portfolio full of male drivers under 25 and all the fancy cars. That's why the using of rating factors is quite intensive in especially general insurance industry. So insurers will rate their risk according to the age of driver, the gender of the driver, and type of car, and even whether the car is garaged or not. But such practice of using rating factor is not very common in the life annuity business. And that is one of the reasons for the lack of both demand and supply in the Australian annuity market. And that's why understanding heterogeneity would be one way of solving that problem. Because if we could understand the heterogeneity structure of the population, we would firstly have an advantage in dealing with the pricing and adverse selection in the annuity business. Also, we may solve the underestimation of mortality improvement in the future, especially at higher ages. So if we allow those high-risk individuals to die out first, then we may have a surviving cohort of with all the healthy individuals, and the mortality improvement of that those healthy lives are more likely to be higher than ignoring heterogeneity. So in this research, what we'll do is to quantify the mortality heterogeneity of the Australian population using the two models I mentioned about. And also based on the quantification result, we will be projecting mortality risks at higher ages, taking into account the heterogeneity. And we will also discuss about the impact of allowing for heterogeneity on life annuity products. So we will look at the difference in annuity prices for heterogeneous lives, and also like what impact heterogeneity structure of the population would have on the annuity business. So the first model we used in the paper is the frailty model. So in this model, each individual is assigned a frailty factor, and this factor is fixed at birth. So basically, when everyone is born, so we all have a frailty factor, and different individuals may have like different frailty factors, but it is fixed at birth. So if I have a relatively higher frailty factor than you, so throughout our lives, I will always have a higher risk of dying than you. And mathematically, it's defined in terms of the false mortality. So for an individual aged X with frailty factor Z, its false mortality is the value of your frailty factor times this mu X1, which represents the false of mortality for a standard individual with frailty 1. So we also call it the standard false of mortality. And since this frailty factor is not observed, and we also don't know what the form of the standard false mortality is, that's where we introduce assumptions in this model. So for the standard false mortality, we would simply assume a Gompers law for it. And for the frailty distribution, there are two commonly used distributions in the literature. The first one is the gamma distribution, and the PDF of the frailty factor will have this form. And the other one is the inverse Gaussian distribution with this form of PDF. And as noticed, this PDF for the inverse Gaussian distribution may not be similar to what we usually see. That's because, well, the PDF itself is like the same as other forms, just with different parameterization. That's because in this form, it would be like easier for us to derive other conclusions, as we will see later. So, well, these two distributions are the assumed distribution of frailty factor at age zero. And the advantage of assuming these forms of frailty distribution is that, like after a certain mathematical derivation, we will find out that the distribution of frailty factor at hx also follows the same distribution, but with different parameterization. So for the gamma distribution, the distribution of frailty at hx is also a gamma with the lambda now equals the original lambda plus this hx1, which is the accumulated hazard at hx. And at hx, the mean frailty of the cohort will be k over lambda x, and the variance of this frailty factor is k over lambda x squared. So for measuring heterogeneity, we might be interested to look at the variance of this frailty factor at different ages, because as the higher the variance becomes, it means that the more heterogeneous the population becomes. And for the inverse Gaussian distribution, the parameterization is quite similar. And also, well, since this lambda x for the gamma distribution and theta x for the inverse Gaussian distribution are all increasing with age, and if we look at the form of the mean and variance of the frailty factor as lambda x and theta x increases, actually the mean frailty of the cohort decreases. And also the variance of this mean frailty factor, the variance of this frailty factor also decreases, which means as those high-risky ones die out, we will have a more healthier cohort, surviving cohort, and within that cohort, the difference between individuals will become smaller. So for estimating the parameters involved in the model, the commonly used approach in the literature is what we call the mean frailty approach. So under this approach, we assume the average force of mortality of the cohort is the cohort force mortality in the following form. So the average force mortality equals the mean frailty value times the standard force mortality. And then the number of deaths of the cohort is assumed to follow a Poisson distribution with parameter this mean mu times the cohort exposure. But if we have a closer look at this function, it is like no other than another form of fitting. It's just another functional form for this standard for the false mortality. And actually, the only impact of parameters in the frailty distribution is to change the mean frailty. And the effect of that parameter on the variance of the frailty factor is not considered. So basically, the estimated result may not reflect the actual heterogeneity structure of the population. And because of that, we have introduced a new method, what we call the normal approximation for sample mean mortality risk. The name is quite long, but it basically summarizes the nature of this method. So basically, based on the previous derivation, we would have a population with frailty factors following certain distribution. And actually, the observed cohort in real life, we can see that as a sample drawing from the general population. And the sample size would be the exposure, the cohort exposure. And according to the central limit theorem, the observed sample mean false mortality will be normally distributed. And under different distributions, the mean and variance of that sample mean has the following forms. So in this case, we actually take into account the variance of this frailty factor, which would have an impact on the heterogeneity structure. And the next model we used in the paper is called the Markov aging model. It's first introduced by Lin and Liu in 2007. And the idea behind this model is from studies in human body functions, which reveal that like many functional variables start declining between the age of 20 to 30, and the decline is roughly linear after certain ages. So they were thinking about modeling the aging process of human beings in terms of the change in physiological functions instead of the increase in age. So they introduced this idea of physiological age, which represents the degree of aging in human body. So for individuals at high physiological age, they are considered to be in a bad health condition and are more likely to die. And change in physiological age represents the decline in human body functions. And in this case, they assume the change in physiological age is like one directional only. So you can only move from a better health condition from a good health condition to a bad one. So we can't change back. And in this case, the mortality rate of an individual does not depend on his age anymore. So it will only depend on which physiological age you are in. So for somebody at age 40 who is quite healthy and he's at physiological age 20, the person will have the same mortality rate as those like age 15, but at a relatively bad health condition. at the same physiological age of 20, so they will have the same mortality rates. And mathematically, the transition is random in nature, so given a transition rate, the distribution of time takes to move into the next state would follow an exponential distribution. So this matrix shows the transition this is the transition rate matrix for all the transient states. So actually, for the full matrix, there should be like another column, another row showing the transition rate into the death state. So the Markov process is actually So if we look at the parameters in this matrix, we would see like the first component is this lambda, and this lambda is different from lambda 1 to lambda k, and then it becomes constant from certain age onwards. And this lambda represents what we call the developing period. So for the initial first stage, the transition rate from each physiological age to the other has a separate rate, which represents the period for us to reach a maximum body function. So usually what we observed in mortality rates is in the early ages, we would see a decline in mortality risk, mortality risk up until certain ages. And that period is measured by a separate transition rate in the development period. And after those development periods, the transition rate will follow we assume it to follow an exponential form. So the death rate, so in this case, we assume a full developmental period, and after that, from state five onwards, the transition rate at each state would have this exponential form. And also notice that we also have a period from state I1 to I2 where we have an extra background rate. This is to capture the mid-age hump in the observed mortality risk. So between the age of 20 to 30, we actually observe a sudden increase in mortality risk, as we will see in the data later. And the advantage of this model setup is that the time to death actually follows a phase type distribution, and the survival function of time to death follows this form, where this alpha is a vector, is the initial state vector. So from age zero, when everyone is at state one, so this alpha would be a vector of zeros with the first entry being one. And this E is a vector of ones, which is just to transform a vector into a single value. And since we have the form of this surviving probability, the death probability can be derived by like doing some simple mathematical calculation. And to estimate the parameters, we will be using the weighted least square estimation. So basically, we want to minimize the sum of this weighted least square, where this weight in this paper, we use the survival probability, which is to balance the contribution of death rates from early age and later ages. So the survival probability will be higher at early ages, where the death probability will be relatively smaller. And the survival probability at higher ages is likely to be lower. And that's also where the death probability becomes higher. So one common feature of these two models is that both models only require simple population mortality data, which is also the only available data when we do this research, given the time frame. So for the frailty model, the input data would be in the form of cohort false mortality. And I'm not sure if you can see the figure clearly, but the left figure shows the false mortality for male cohort from 1940 to 1950. So it shows the cohort for false mortality for three cohorts. And on the right-hand side is the female cohort. And for the Markov aging model, the input data would be in the form of death probability. Well, both figures shows the log scale of the false mortality or death probability. And the death probability in the Markov aging model is estimated from the central death rate. So Qx equals the central death rate over 1 plus a half of the central death rate. So this figure shows the result of model fitting. The above three diagrams shows the fitting, shows the observed data and also the fitting under two assumed distributions. And as we can see, the red line, which is the fitting for the gamma distribution, is better than the green line, which is fitting for the inverse Gaussian distribution. So we would assume the gamma distribution for our further analysis. And based on the fitting result, we also plot the false mortality for the cohort at higher ages. So the data only covers up to age 50 or 50 to 60, and we project the mortality risk up to 110. And in the diagram, it shows a straight line, but it's actually the log scale of the false mortality. So if we actually plot the death probability, we will see the slope of increase at higher ages to be slower, which represents the mortality improvement at higher ages. And for the Markov aging model, the blue line shows the original data, and the red line shows the fitting with projection into higher ages. And as seen in this case, the mortality improvement at higher ages is quite significant, as the slope of increase decreased a lot. So based on the estimated result, we would like to know the distribution of frailty, which actually measures the heterogeneity of the population. So those lines are quite close to each other, but they actually represent the distribution of frailty at different ages. So as we can see, at all ages, the distribution of frailty factor is highly skewed. So the majority of lives will be concentrating on the low frailty value areas. And the scale shows in the diagram is only from 0 to 0.5. So there will be lives down the tail, especially at age 0, because we assume at age 0, the distribution would have a mean of 1. And as age increases, those high risky ones are likely to die out first. And we can see from the diagram that the distribution curve shifts to the left. And especially at age 90, the curve is almost sitting on the y-axis. But if you have a look at in a smaller scale, you would actually see there's still some distance between the y-axis and the curve. And we also plot the mortality risk for individuals with different frailty value. So this green line shows the mortality risk of an individual with frailty factor 1, which is quite high comparing with the cohort. So the blue line down the bottom shows the cohort false mortality. And as we can see, the increase in cohort false mortality is usually more gradually than the individual mortality risk. So for an individual, it's more likely for that individual to stay healthy with a low mortality risk for a long period of time until sudden event happens, such as some disease. And the mortality risk increases significantly, and the person is expected to die within a short period of time. And as we can see, the mortality risk reached 1 quite quickly. And under the Markov aging model, the heterogeneity of the population is measured by the distribution of this physiological age at different ages. So at age 40, we would have the distribution of physiological age in the following shape. The red line is for the 1945 cohort, and the blue line is for the 1940 cohort. And as we can see, from 1940 to 1945, the curve actually shifts leftwards, which actually represents the mortality improvement over that five-year period, which is not significant, but we can still see the difference. And the diagram on the right shows the distribution of physiological age at age 65. So comparing age 40 and age 65, we can see the whole curve shifts to the right, which means the on average, the cohort is moving to a higher physiological age, so in a relatively like bad health state. And also the distribution is, well, the heterogeneity is also higher at age 65, so the distribution is more spread over than at early ages. And these two tables shows the annuity rates for heterogeneous individuals. So at age 65, the mortality, the death probability for different individuals with different frailty factors is shown in the first table, second line. And as we can see, the death rate for the cohort is 0.012. And the death probability for individuals with frailty factor 0.0005, which has a mortality risk of 0.01, and actually more than 76% of the population would have a mortality risk lower than the cohort average. Which means that if we don't take into account heterogeneity in pricing annuity contracts, we would like very likely to end up with a portfolio that has a much better mortality risk than the average population. And from the second table, the death probability for individuals at different states is shown in the second line. And as I said earlier, the death probability in this case does not depend on the age. So for individuals with any age in stage 65, they would have a death probability of 0.006. And if we compare the two tables, so at age 65, we would have around 75% of the population with a mortality risk of lower than 0.01. And in the second table, we would have around similar percentage of population, sorry, 75, to have a mortality risk of lower than 0.015, which is quite similar when you compare the two figures. But at higher ages, for example, the last column of both tables, so there will be around 99.6% of the population to have a mortality rate of lower than 0.047 according to the second table. But for the first table, the comparing rate is much higher. That is because the heterogeneity and the two models are measured by different terms. For the frailty model, it is actually measured by a fixed factor. And in the second model, it is measured by relative term. So even if at age 65, I'm in a relatively higher physiological age than another people, but actually after 10 years, I may end up in a lower physiological age than that person. Whereas in the frailty model, like if my frailty factor is higher than the other person, then at any age, I would have a higher mortality risk than that one. So in summary, as we can see, both models indicate that the mortality heterogeneity for the Australian population is significant, but the heterogeneity structure and the estimated results are different. Well, that's mainly due to the different nature of the models. And in the frailty model, the distribution of frailty is heavily skewed, so we have the majority of the population concentrating on the low frailty range. And only a small proportion of high risk down the tail will die first, which actually comply with what we observed in the cause of death pattern. So at early ages, we would expect a high mortality risk. In frailty model, it represents those deaths with high frailty factor. But one of the obvious disadvantage of this frailty model is that it's heavily dependent on assumptions. So we assumed both the form of standard false mortality and the form of frailty distribution. And actually there are many, many choices of those ones. And to see which, and since this frailty factor is not observed, we don't have a tool to compare actually which assumptions fits better. And because of that, it would be less practical in the real world, since it's hard to link to real-world observations. And for the Markov aging model, the heterogeneity of the population increases with age. And it is more practical because, like, ultimately the physiological age is just a measure of health conditions of an individual, and it would be easier to link the physiological age of an individual to the relative, like to related health indicators, which represents the health condition of that individual. And in that case, we can provide a mapping from health conditions to physiological age and find the mortality risk based on the estimated result in the model. So that basically covers everything in the paper. So now, any questions? And comments? Yeah.
My question, can you go forward a little bit further from that?
So yeah, that's okay.
There's those shapes of the mortality at those very high ages that I was interested in, the very large difference between the two models, the
cohort. So you mean this one and that one?
And I was going to say that particularly if we're looking at annuity business, it's the mortality at those very high ages is going to be crucial, and they look like quite substantial differences. And they're very hard to predict up there, of course, because you don't have data on it. And you've extrapolated. And so maybe you could just comment a little bit more on that shape at those very high ages, yeah?
Well, actually, like, I should have plotted another diagram. So actually, for the frailty model, this diagram shows the log scale of the false mortality. And in the next diagram, it actually shows the log scale of the death probability. So if you do the transformation and compare both models using the same risk, you will actually see like both models would have a projection of death risk following this shape. So it would be quite similar, because like to transform from false mortality to death rate, you will do the exponential, and the exponential of a straight line would more likely to become a less steep curve.
So if it does flatten out there, that's obviously very... I should have introduced myself too. I'm Alan Dougal. That makes it very difficult for the annuity providers if they get to that stage. So if the mortality does flatten out rather than just continuing to go up, that could be very expensive. So it's an important thing for people to work out.
Thank you. Okay, thanks. Yeah.
I'm Alan Whitelock-Jones. I had an observation, which is that I think the conclusions of the model might actually be buried deeply in the assumptions.
Yeah.
And as a way of illustration, I can consider two fairly simplistic models of population mortality. Under the one model, you have a QX which applies uniformly to everybody at a specific age, and under that model, everyone has zero heterogeneity, they're identical. Under the other model, everyone at birth can have a parameter written on their forehead in invisible ink, which I will call age at death, and the probability of them dying in the year of death is 1, and their probability in dying in any other year is 0. Under that model, you have a very heterogeneous population. Yet it's exactly the same curve of mortality, and in fact, it's just two views of the same thing. So I think the only way you can decide that heterogeneity is what's causing it is if you have an ultraviolet light that you can see the frailty factor that's been written on their forehead. And until you have that ultraviolet light, heterogeneity is just an unmeasured characteristic of the population.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it leads to conclusions about annuity rates at all. Anyway, that's my view. Thank you.
Well, thanks. But in real life, we do have like different mortality risk factors, which is observable, such as like age and gender are certainly the two obvious ones, but also education and income status, smoking status, they all influence the mortality risk of individuals. And different individuals with different outcome of those factors would have a different mortality risk. And for this paper, since we don't have a relative data, so we can only apply the population mortality data, and that's why we picked these two models. And actually, although this frailty factor is not observed, but actually it is still possible for us to think forward and link this frailty factor to something that we can observe in real life. So since this frailty factor is fixed at birth, so fixed at early age and does not change during the life of the time, so it might be possible to link it to something we observe in real life which has similar characteristics, such as education status, which is usually fixed for individual at a relatively early age. And also, it would also lead me to think that this frailty factor can actually represent the genes of an individual. And as technology develops, maybe one day we can have the technology to record like the genes of any individual at birth, so we can have that database, and modeling of that database would also lead us to draw some conclusions about the heterogeneity of the population. Yeah. Any other questions?
I'll ask a question to kick things along. I was wondering, annuities are obviously something which is not a big market in Australia, and given the current level of interest rates, may not be a market in Australia for some time to come. But a sort of equivalent area where the mortality rates and other rates of older people is very important is the retirement village industry. So in retirement villages, there are three sort of states. You can have your own unit, you can be in a self-cared facility, or you can be in a nursing home, and people go between the three states, and a retirement village can cover any one of the three states or all of them. What is crucial in retirement villages for their economic model is how quickly people move between those states, because where they make most of their money is buying and selling the units. So do you think that your research here could be modified to that sort of scenario where it's not just covering mortality but is also covering people moving between states and their levels of frailty between those states?
Well, if we would like to see the move between states, then we may like better off if we have some detailed data, so not only just mortality data. And actually, the implication of this paper is actually to see the heterogeneity structure of the population. So if you have a population that is very skewed, so you have the majority of the population concentrating on the low frailty area, you actually won't care too much about tail, so you can have a conditional probability given that your frailty value is less than certain value. And in that case, because at the low frailty range, individuals are not that heterogeneous anymore. So it would provide the good news to the annuity providers. So if we can deal with the tails, actually we can tackle the problem of heterogeneity and adverse selection.
Are there any other questions?
Duncan Rawlinson, just a couple of observations. Firstly, I think you're to be commended for having a go with this. This is always a very difficult subject for anyone that's looking in the post-retirement space. I suppose a couple of observations, maybe echoing a little bit of Alan Doble's comments. If I understand this correctly, the frailty model, I suppose as you describe them, I was drawn a little bit more naturally to the Markov model, but the frailty model, if I understand the basic construct of that model, I think I'm struggling with how, sort of, maybe you probably characterise this, but in the real world, sort of just labelling someone at birth with a particular condition of frailty, whether or not in my 20s I choose to take up smoking is going to have a huge bearing on my future life outcomes that, if I understand it correctly, it just isn't going to be captured in a frailty model. And on something like the Markov model, again, if I heard it correctly, I think you said that it's a one-way process. You can only age upwards. You can't age downwards. And again, I've got a bit of a problem with that. I mean, statins coming in are going to have had huge impacts on life outcomes for older age people. Likewise, if I take up smoking in my 20s but give up smoking in my 40s, then intuitively, I like the idea of having a physiological age, but struggle with the concept that it can only go up and can't go back if I make different life choices along the way. Now, I know this is a bit of a journey, so it's not intended as a criticism of what you're doing. I think it's sort of you're to be commended for having a go here, but I think it leaves us still with a continuing challenge of how to apply some of these concepts in the real world.
Yeah. Well, based on the availability of relevant data, like we would certainly like to do more research in the topic you suggested. And like just a little bit more comment on the Markov aging model, because like the physiological age is not exactly the same as a health measure as we would usually think about. It's actually a measure of functionability of our body organs. So usually the decline in functionality of human organs are one-directional. So if there is some permanent damage to your liver or something else, it usually stays and can only go worse. So, but again, that is hard to observe in real life. So if we have some detailed data, we can certainly do some more modeling on that area.
Yeah, I'd probably push back slightly on that. I mean, I understand the issue around liver deterioration, but then I should say I'm not a smoker despite my smoking allergies, but clearly there's a lot of studies around the health benefits on lungs of giving up smoking, so I'm not sure that sort of all of the physiological factors on individual organs are necessarily all one way. And I wasn't sure, though, is it just organs or does it extend to limbs and musculoskeletal? I mean, if I sort of hit the gym 7 days a week from age 50, is this going to do anything for me in the context of your model, or is it just something that's
in the original model? It just says that it's a measure of functional variables of human bodies. Actually, there's no link from this physiological age to any observation in real life, and actually, like before doing the modeling, we did do some background research about those mortality risk factors, and like smoking is certainly a factor that would have a huge impact on mortality risk. But interestingly, for those who do not smoke, obviously they will have a lower mortality risk. But for those smokers who give up smoking, and in the initial 10 to 15 years, they actually experienced a higher mortality risk. So, which may lead to a weird conclusion that for those weak individuals at higher ages who are smokers, it might be better off to keep them smoking to live longer. And also, yeah, as marriage and other factors, income, they all impact mortality risk. Questions?
Yes, no, thank you. It was very, very interesting, and I can see the challenge in parameterizing it, but at least you've laid out a way that you could start thinking about it and the sort of data that you could search for to help truly parameterize it. Actually, just in the interest of keeping the discussion going, in our observation, while we were quite concerned about like retirement age heterogeneity, trying to set up the groups properly so that we would sort of like not miss or not misunderstand the subgroup structure of the mortality, we tended to observe, and data seemed to show a level of convergence of mortality rates of groups that age 65 were quite heterogeneous. As they died off, you all converged towards a single mortality rate or a less spread rate of mortality. And we saw that in particular, for example, in, I had some French data on elderly impaired lives. And so the difference in the rates of mortality for the different severity of impairment reduced and really narrowed in as you got into the sort of late 80s, early 90s. And I wonder if that's consistent. I just was interested to know if that was consistent with what you've just shown us here.
So basically the grouping, I guess, will be based on some factors we can observe in real life. And at higher ages, the mortality rates for different groups seem to converge to a similar level. And if you link it to the frailty model, well, although we put people into different groups, but those survivors in those groups at higher ages are all with low frailty factors. Oh, any other comments, questions?
Well, if there's no further comments, we might thank Shu for his very insightful presentation and wind things up.